Robitussin for all your inner demons.
Like, what a perfect little innocent, cuddly form for an antichrist.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Welcome to Unethical Podcast. Yeah, Selkirk, Manitoba. I don't think I'd go to Manitoba, even if it was on my way to somewhere else. I'd go around Manitoba.
Okay, poor fucking Manitoba. Would Manitoba ever do to you, Celeste?
Well, to start with, that's where Tim McLean got his head lobbed off on a greyhound. That was Portage la Prairie, Manitoba.
Okay. But, like, okay, I got a question about, what's that guy's name again? What did he change his name to?
Will Baker.
I forgot his name. Yeah, Will Baker. I had a question about Will Baker. You did all the research for that, so I don't really know. But Carol, Sarah's cousin that's staying with us right now, she's from Wawa, or was living in Wawa, and worked at the hospital. And apparently, he had just had a psychotic break in Wawa before he went there. And they, like, put him on the bus. Like, they were like, can't deal with this guy. Go. So he was already having, like, a meltdown prior to... I didn't know that. Was that true? Like, he was already in, like, a mental grab?
Yeah. Yeah, that happened.
Holy shit.
That's fucking wild. Cause, like,
it was right after his wife left, I believe.
Yeah, that's what she was saying. He was, like, having a meltdown over, like, something. And they, like, instead of trying to treat him, they're just like, on to the next town, man.
Well, yeah, because he ended up, because right, he was in Manitoba with his wife. His wife leaves. And then he goes to Edmonton. He gets the job as the newspaper delivery person for the Edmonton Sun. Actually, it might have just been all the Edmonton newspapers. I'm not sure. But he was originally from Manitoba, and then he left to go to Edmonton after he was admitted into the emergency room or whatever because of what? What was he doing? Oh, he was doing something weird in public, and I can't remember what it was.
But, like, Wawa's in Ontario. That's why I'm wondering if that, like, because that's the further east than Manitoba, right? Like, was he traveling west towards, or was he traveling east?
No, to my knowledge, I don't remember him ever being in Ontario.
Yes. Interesting. Anyways, I forgot he had already had a meltdown, and then fucking everybody, like, wow. Will Baker, if you're still in our group, how's it going, buddy?
Well, then he had two, because that also happened in Manitoba.
Yeah. Well, anyways, regardless, I just... Wow, just a couple pills, just a little bit of forethought would have stopped him from lobbing a goddamn head off.
Oh, you know what? This is actually a really good segue to get into this episode. In fact, this could not be better.
Weird. I didn't do that on purpose at all.
I love when that happens.
Literally, we were talking about Will Baker yesterday, so.
Yeah.
That's finished right. Editing. Will Baker is the guy now. Just so everybody knows, his name is Will Baker. There's Will Baker. Meet,
like, a 6 foot tall Asian dude named Will Baker. Just be alert.
That's all. Fuck that guy.
Maybe. Oh, I didn't know that dude was in our group.
Embrace your double chins.
You didn't hear this part?
I don't think.
I don't think he is anymore, but you didn't hear this story before? Did we say it on the show before? I think we did.
Yes, on the episode that Kent came on to talk about Wendigos, we told him the story.
Oh, yeah, that's right. But yeah, no, he, a guy who looks suspicious, like he had an emotive, like a. Whatever the fuck you can call that, where you make your avatar. He had an avatar that was like a Chinese dude.
Yeah.
He was called Steve Harvey. And he just showed up the day after we dropped the episode. And it was super random. And I asked him, I don't know why we thought, what was the reasoning we thought? We're like, this guy's, is he Will Baker?
Because he literally joined Facebook the day the episode came out and joined our group immediately. And his profile picture and cover photo were both Steve Harvey, and his name was Steve Harvey, but his little, like, memoji or whatever was a bald Asian dude.
Yeah. So I messaged him. I'm like, are you Will Baker? Like, are you in here? And then he never messaged me back. I think he messaged me back with, like...
He did. He said, you don't know me.
Yeah, you don't know me. I said, yeah, do I know you? And he said, you don't know me. And then I tried to message him, like, well, how did you find the podcast or whatever? And he just never messaged back, and then he was gone off the group pretty much instantaneously. Damn. Yeah. So suspicions were there. But if he's still there under a different name, your name's Will Baker. Everybody know Will Baker.
Will Baker, if you're listening, listen. So, yeah, this is actually like a really good segue into today's episode, because basically it's going to be a very similar story with a very different ending.
Oh, great. So, fantastic. Decapitation. That's fantastic.
There is no decapitation.
I had a good decapitation. God damn it, Celeste. I was just getting excited.
None. Sorry. My bad.
That's okay.
That's on me. That's okay. My fault. No decapitation on this one.
I'll just think about decapitation. That's all.
Okay. Well, feel free to just consider all the victims decapitated.
Okay.
Okay. I mean, if that helps, you know, like if you're doing a speech, instead of imagining everybody in their underwear, just imagine all the victims decapitated.
Oh my God.
If that helps. I think this 3 minutes of decapitation talk has gotten, I think I got it out of me. I think I'm good.
If this is what you think is 3 minutes, your wife must be really disappointed.
Oh, I last less than that. Oh my God.
All right, guys, I've missed you.
Oh, I missed you guys. Holy shit.
Let's jump right into it. Today, we're going to be talking about a man. And I really hope neither of you know this case, but if you do, whatever, feel free to just talk about it. His name is Andre Lee Thomas, or Andre Thomas, depending on which resource. Both are used pretty much evenly as frequently. Andre Lee Thomas.
The only Andre I'm familiar with, the only Andre I'm familiar with is Andre 3000, Outcast. I'm sorry.
Oh, how could you disrespect Andre the Giant nothing. Like that?
Oh, yeah. Fuck,
first Andre of all, that's... Andre the Giant is the heavy hitter for just like Andre in general. And in crime, the heavy hitter is Andre Chikatilo.
Yeah. But isn't he Andrea Chikatilo?
I don't think so. Pretty sure it's Andre.
Anyways, I'm trying to get out of this as much as possible. I'm trying to get out of this. I can't. I screwed up. Okay. Andre.
Hey, reverse. Okay.
Sorry, Miss Jackson.
Okay, so Andre Lee Thomas was born March 17th, 1983 in Muskogee County, Oklahoma, but he was raised primarily in Sherman, Texas, which is where our story takes place, okay? Andre was described as a good child by his parents, both of whom are now deceased. During his childhood, his mother allegedly struggled with alcoholism and was reported to be abusive by Andre's father. However, Andre's mother would turn around and say that Andre's father was absent and he really wouldn't know anything about their dynamic. Two of the things that I listened to to prepare for this simply referred to her as a strict parent. The family lived in poverty, and Andre and his siblings frequently went without basic necessities such as food and heat. Regardless of these disadvantages, Andre was ambitious and motivated enough that people took notice of his natural talent with mechanics. So he was capable of taking apart and rebuilding a vehicle engine before he even hit high school. And he had a passion for sketching designs for vehicles that he hoped in the future to build.
Sorry, what grade was he in doing this? Because, like, is it just like banana helicopters and shit like that? And everyone's like, oh, you're so creative.
No, I guess this was like sort of between maybe like 13-ish to high school. He started sketching these designs, I guess.
So we're talking young still. Okay, good.
Yeah, yeah. But I guess that was his dream or whatever. But his Sunday school teacher described him as brilliant, energetic, and eager to learn. And basically she said, you know, if his circumstances had been a little bit different, he would have been, you know, he would have been the next Elon Musk. She was generous.
I was going to say everybody says that about their favorite kid. You know what I mean? Like, he was so smart until he murdered. I don't know if he murdered, but I mean, he was like the best until he started killing and raping.
Yeah. To that point, a lot of the podcasts, documentaries, articles that I found, which focused highly on what we're going to get into at basically towards the end, all sort of smoothed over his childhood just like I did just now. In fact, none of them got into the truth of his childhood. I assume because, you know, he wasn't a perfect kid overflowing with potential. He was a criminal by age 12. I don't know what it was. I don't know what he did because he was a minor, but he had a criminal record by age 12, and he was on probation from basically 12 until he goes to prison. So,
damn.
And, unless he was at Sunday school, then he was a gem. Like,
yeah. And his mother, you know, we'll get into everything, but you'll understand why this narrative was pushed of Andre being this kid with potential with a pretty standard childhood. You'll understand why. But I want to get into the truth because, like I said, nobody else did. And the only reason I know the truth is because I actually found all of the court documents, the actual exhibit, whatever, 1 through 905 or whatever. And I read them all. So another thing none of them seem to mention is he had at least 5 brothers. And I found confirmation that all but one did their own stints in juvenile detention before ending up in either mental hospitals or prisons themselves.
Oh, so this wasn't unheard of with his siblings then. They were all kind of in the same boat.
No, this was not a normal childhood. This was not a pleasant childhood. This was a horrible childhood.
Even what you described, though, you said like, okay, I know you're going to tell us more, but I mean, what you said was his mom was strict and he didn't really get enough food and stuff like that. Like they were scarce on that kind of stuff. It doesn't sound great. You know, it doesn't sound, it's not like it sounds that normal. Like, I don't know, you called it a standard childhood. I'm like, that's not really a standard childhood. You know what I mean? It's kind of a shitty one when you can't.
I don't know if it's bad to say this exactly, but I think for people of, Andre is Black. I think for people who are Black, this would be actually considered a somewhat normal childhood because of just the circumstantial disadvantages that they tend to have.
I gotcha. I'm going to say this right now, though. I picked the right Andre. All right, moving on.
You did.
Dead.
His folks were pieces of shit. His mom was not strict. And his dad was not there at all. It wasn't just that. Yeah. You know, he just wasn't around much. He was not there. I couldn't, in all the hundreds of documents that I looked at, he wasn't there. He wasn't mentioned. He never signed anything. She signed whatever. We'll get into it. So during my research, I found the entire court case documents. And in there were several juvenile documents that were submitted. And none of which were signed by either parent or guardian, like I mentioned. So his parents never showed up. They didn't show up to get him from jail. They didn't show up to his court hearings. They didn't show up to anything. Pretty much anything he dealt with regards to the justice system, he had a stand-in guardian that the court has to stand in for them, to represent the interests of a child when their parents just don't show up, which is horrible. Social services had received serious reports twice that I could find, once in 1996 and then again in 1999. The first incident report stated that the house had no utilities, so his mother had been stealing water from a city fire hydrant. The children had no discipline at home, and people reported that they would scream, curse, and become violent anytime they didn't get their way, and their mother did absolutely nothing about this behavior. And on several occasions, it was seen that the children were just shit their pants, and the mother would hose them off on the street because they didn't have plumbing.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and say it. I think that if you are ingenious enough to steal from the fire hydrant, you should be able to just keep the fire hydrant water. And like spraying your kids down is all you have at that point. If all you have is the hydrant, like, I don't know what to say. Like, you're going to have to spray them down. I feel like that's unjust. Give them their hydrant water. Free the hydrant water. Celeste hates me right now. It's awesome.
It's not that I necessarily disagree with you, but I think like my point here is not necessarily that what she was doing was wrong. It's that she has children to take care of, man.
And she doesn't have utilities.
I don't think she's like, you know what? I don't want utilities. I'm just not going to get them. Like, I feel like if she's going out to fucking make a hole in the hydrant, she's trying. Like, she's fucking opening the hydrant. She's doing something. Okay.
She might be. I mean, sure, she's trying to the extent that she doesn't want to hang out with the kids with the shit in their pants.
I don't agree with like the kids just shitting their pants and stuff like that, but I mean, I'm just saying, like, maybe that's the only option this lady had to get fucking water, because sometimes it's hard to get a job, especially when you have kids. This is indicative of someone who's psychopathic later on. They get shitty with childhoods like this, but I don't think it's like necessarily the mom's fault, more maybe the dad's fault for fucking off and not helping, but like,
I think this is a societal an issue at its heart, regardless of anything else, right? I don't think it's their fault. They're in this situation in the first place, and it's undoubtedly she came from a cycle of horrible abuse and neglect. I'm not arguing that, but I do think that as parents, we have a responsibility to say to ourselves, I can't provide for my children. I need to do something to help them. And that goes, and nobody, she didn't reach out for any kind of assistance. I assume because she didn't want to lose her kids for whatever reason. If she's a good mom, because she loves them. If she's a shitty mom, it's probably because she gets a government stipend for them. You know what I mean?
I see both sides of it. I get that she's shitty to her kids, but I don't think she was like, I'm going to be shitty to my kids, from what I heard so far. You know,
I have more to say. So
that's what I mean. Yeah, exactly. From what I heard so far.
Okay, so we'll expand on that. Basically, that was it for that report. The second report stated that the oldest brother in the home, his name was James, had been admitted to the hospital with kidney failure, liver failure, and a full body scaly rash. He had received no medical intervention under their mother's care, and he reported that he wanted to get help sooner, but he was scared of his mother as she was physically abusive, and she threatened him when he tried to ask to go see a doctor. She didn't want to be caught. She didn't want to have to deal with this. So,
all right, you're winning me over. She sounds cuntier.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. So this kid almost died, but he didn't. He did in fact go on to ride around town on his bicycle, snorting lighter fluid. So happy ending for him, I guess. The report also mentioned that it was implied that she didn't want to be brought into the justice system or the medical system or whatever because she was manufacturing methamphetamine. That's basically what James told them. So on both of these reports, and you're going to love this, on both of these reports, the cases were closed without any intervention due to family moved / cannot locate. So it took so long for them to get around to these cases that by the time they actually came across somebody's desk, they were gone. They didn't live there anymore. And they couldn't find them. Also, Andre was on probation and in regular contact with a probation officer in both 1996 officer. I think I said offer, but I meant officer. In both 1999 and 1996. So this makes no fucking sense to me. He's listed on the complaints as a child in danger. But they can't find
them. What the fuck?
But the probation officer knows exactly where they are and talks to them. I don't understand this.
Or does the probation officer actually talk to them or just like pencil whip out a thing so they don't have to do any work?
No. There was fucking 60 pages of literally just date interaction he had with Andre. Interaction he had with Andre's mother. Date, da 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 da. I read pages and pages of it. It was really interesting in a horrible way. It was a sort of an interesting process. You get like a very accurate kind of description of everything going on during that time. You know, and the probation officer's notes were full of calls from Andre's mother, because part of the requirement of probation is you have to report. You have to go to the courthouse either once every week or once every 2 weeks, and you actually have to physically be there. That's how they make sure that you're not going out of your probation area, right? Because you have to be accountable to one place. But it's full of calls from Andre's mother saying, oh, I can't bring him in, I don't work, I have no gas money, it's too cold, I couldn't possibly make my baby walk that far. A part of Andre's probation is that he's required to get a job through their program, so he starts working at Popeye's Chicken, and he has to use most of that money, I think it's like 70%, to pay back restitution for whatever his crime was. But the rest he's allowed to keep, which I think is fair. Except he opened up to his probation officer that basically any money that he did bring home, his mom took from him. And yet, well, he didn't actually specify this, but and yet the social service reports indicate they still don't have utilities. They still don't have food. They still don't have anything, even with Andre bringing in income. Nothing seemed to change. The only thing that didn't change was that she was still wasted all the time.
That's a little different. I don't like this lady anymore. I'm trying to like have her back.
Yeah, because I mean, you can be in a bad situation and still be a loving parent doing the best you can. You know, it doesn't sound like now she's loving or doing what she can. If there is money involved and if she's dealing meth, then she's got money for utilities, like even if it's cash. But if she's fucked up all the time on meth or alcohol or whatever, then yeah, that's definitely where all that's going.
Yeah, or bad debts, or who even knows what's going on. But I don't disagree with her either. In my justification of things would be, if Jack fucked up and he had to get a job through like some juvenile probation, I fully agree. Any money that you make after restitution, you do give it to me, and I'm going to put it away for you, or I'm going to use it to make sure that you get everything that you still need. But I'm not giving you money to screw around with, because you are not in a place to make good decisions with that money. Or I'm not giving you, but like, this is a punishment. It's still your money. I'm still going to make sure that it's used for you, but you don't need walking around money after the responsibility level that you showed.
Yeah, for sure. And honestly, like, her with the crack money, it's not hard to pay a bill. Like, it really isn't. You just got to pay it. That's all. So like, you should have enough money to give them electricity. It's, I didn't know if they're selling crack or whatever, meth, or making, I guess maybe you could just make meth for yourself. I don't know if that's a thing, but yeah, getting his cash, then I'm like, come on, pay your bills, man. That's bad.
Yeah, well, nobody makes water and distributes their own meth, really. You work with a collective that all sort of, everybody owns a part of like the lab, basically, and you all sort of make money collectively. So she was involved in whatever collective was involved in making meth, is probably what happened.
Yeah, once you have like older brothers and stuff, you said this guy had like older brothers, like, you feel like you'd be like smacking the meth pipe out of your mom's hands and being like, I'm taking care of the money now, bitch. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you don't get to anymore.
Well, his oldest brother was a little bit busy in full kidney and liver failure.
Oh yeah.
So Andre was like a middle-ish, and James was the oldest. And then there was three more. I think one is in between Andre and James, and the other two are younger than Andre. Like I said, all of them basically end up in more or less the exact same patterns through a combination of different things. Addiction, you know, criminal intent, mental illness. None of them ended up okay. The only one I couldn't figure out is the youngest. I have no idea what happened to him, because I think he actually got removed eventually from the home.
I'm basing everything, all my knowledge on shitty households like this, on the TV show Shameless, and all the kids just take care of the house. So I was, I feel like that's what would happen. You know what
no,
I mean?
No, like, most of the time it's just cyclical, and the kids also end up dead end people.
I got to stop basing my reality on TV shows.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, so I mentioned that he's opening up to his probation officer. I think he's finding like a level of comfort in having this person that's not family that he can kind of confide in. But obviously the probation officer has to be unbiased, right? And objective. But he opens up to him that he's having some trouble controlling his temper, but he doesn't like that. He wishes he could be in more control of his temper. He's feeling overwhelmed with school. He doesn't like that his mom's making him give her all his money, and that he has started experiencing suicidal thoughts. So he's 13 at this time when he starts opening up about this stuff. He's been on probation since he was 12. So he recommends that he go get assessed by the program psychologist, mostly just to see if these suicidal thoughts are a real risk for this individual. So I guess what happened was Andre goes to this appointment on his bicycle. He gets assessed by the counselor, and the counselor basically reports that, I don't think there's any danger that this individual is going to act on their suicidal thoughts. However, I do think they would benefit from regular counseling. And so I've recommended that he gets counseling through XNext program. It doesn't cost him anything, and he should do weekly sessions. So that's what happened with that. But anyway, he gets out of the session and his bike is stolen. His probation officer calls his mom to come pick him up. And his mom says, I don't have any gas. This is what he has a bike for. It's not my problem that it's gone. He can figure it out. So his probation officer gives him a ride home. All throughout this, he's telling the probation officer everything is fine at home. He gets along great with his family.
Yeah, probably a scary place to be. You probably just tell them that so it's not more scary when you get home.
Yeah. So this is a 13-year-old boy, like I said. Like, that's still a baby. You should.
Yeah.
Oscar's definitely 13. Terrified of his mother.
Oscar's definitely. 13, I get it.
Definitely. And you're still accountable at that age for the things that your kids do when they're 13. If they commit a crime, you have to walk hand in hand with them through the consequences of that as their parent. Sorry, this is on you, whether you like it or not.
Yeah, it's not 1842 where he's in charge of a ship by now. He's still a kid.
Yeah, married with a wife and kids.
Yeah, married off.
Yeah.
My wife's pregnant. I'm a farmer. You're 13, yeah. Dude.
Yeah. Nope, none of that. He's just coming home at 12. I got arrested. I spent a couple days in juvie. Then I went to court. Okay. She wasn't even there. She didn't know anything. She didn't even care, I guess, that he was in juvie for like 2 days and never called or never talked to her because she didn't show up.
Thank God. Thank God you're in juvie. It was nice. You're back. Ugh.
With that many kids in the house, she may not have even noticed.
Yeah, that could be true, too.
Basically, Andre is making the effort to call his probation officer, even though he's not making it to the reporting, which the probation officer acknowledges isn't really on him as a 13-year-old boy.
Yeah! Thank God!
Yeah, so he doesn't report him for this. He doesn't report him for violating his probation because he's not showing up to these, because he knows that the mother is not cooperating and that all this kid had was a bike and he's working and he's going to school, da 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 da.
Mom's not giving him the money, so he can't go buy a new bike. Like, he's just continuously stuck in this shitty cycle.
He did end up getting another bike. I think what happened is literally he went back and stole his bike from the person that stole his bike.
Hell yeah.
He ended up like with the same bike again. Anyway, eventually, basically, it does come out from the probation officer checking in with his work in his school that Andre has not been attending school and he has been missing work. Not all work, he's still working there, but he has been missing shifts and he's missing a significant amount of school. And so he then asks him about it the next time they do their phone check-in. And he's like, I couldn't get there because I didn't have a ride, or this happened, that happened. It was too whatever for me to bike there. He had excuses. And so basically the parole officer is like, look, man, it's up to you at this point. You need to follow the rules, or I have to do what I have to do. So he gives him like one more chance and he screwed it up. Basically, he was picked back up and sent to the Juvenile Department of Corrections for violating his probation with disorderly conduct, for having an argument with his boss at work and then threatening her and cursing at her before walking out on his job, failing to report his absences from school, and then the not showing up to the reports. So he was removed from school and he was removed from his home. In a court hearing that his mother did not show up for as guardian, he was sentenced to 60 days in a juvenile detention center boot camp.
These boot camps are fucking history of shitty, like just a money grab. They don't do anything good. They do bad things.
They are disturbing, and he probably would have been butt raped had he gone. But he didn't go. He did not show up to be incarcerated when he was due to show up. And he was in fugitive status for several months, but kept in contact with his parole officer during that time, just not telling him where he was, and basically advising him that, look, I'm not going to go. My girl is pregnant, and I'm not going to miss that or my son being born.
Wait, the 13-year-old kid, he's still 13? He has a girl that's pregnant?
No, he's 15 now.
Okay, still. Jesus.
Ooh.
Sweet baby.
Keep in mind, these notes are like one, maybe two check-ins a month that he's doing. So
I gotcha.
All those pages is literally like once a month. So it goes fast. So he's 15 now. He's refusing to go in. And I have no idea how this happened, but eventually he was medically disqualified from having to attend boot camp. And instead he was enrolled in the juvenile detention GED program at 15 years old. So that didn't have a requirement the same way that the boot camp did, where he had to attend X amount of days or whatever. Basically, he was not allowed in regular school anymore. If he wanted schooling, he had to do it through the juvenile detention. The medical dismissal, that could be for a couple of things. I don't know if it was because he had, there was medical reports of him having an issue with breaking out in welts. It was like a reaction to a medicine that he used for allergies or something like that. So I don't know if it was that was the reason that he was disqualified, or if it was because of the symptoms that he started showing right around this age. I'm not sure when the symptoms exactly started in relation to this. So it may have just been because of the mental health symptoms that he was experiencing, which I'm going to get into. So you're welcome for everybody. That was the real childhood story of Andre for the first time seemingly ever. So we can now return to the regularly scheduled narrative.
Sad, super sad. Sad shit, man.
Yeah, it was a shitty childhood, and he made a series of really bad decisions that personally, I think when you're a kid, don't hold as much weight as when you're an adult. And I don't think there's any reason to hide that if you're trying to support what they're getting in. What I'm going to explain later, they are trying to support by hiding this. I don't think anybody would look at that situation with including the criminal history as a child and the abuse and et cetera, and it would change anything. I really don't.
I just feel bad for that kid. Like, he sounded like he was trying. Like, I get that he had anger problems. He had issues, don't get me wrong. But, I mean, I feel like he was trying to get out of it a bit. And then just shittier part of his other part of life fucked him over. Like, getting stolen, his mom being a twat. Like, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. We'll see. I'm just
Yeah, I mean, trying to get out of shit is what his mom was teaching him. You know, his mom was like, oh, I don't have gas. I can't get him there. You know, she can't even live up to the minimal standards of the court. So why should he think he has to do any of that? You know,
he like, learned from there a master. Came a point.
Yeah, exactly. That he was like, oh, I know the excuses I can give the parole officer because they're the ones mom uses. You know, and that parole officer wasn't stupid to that fact.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're overworked and really it's hard to manage as many as probably are violating their probation. But I don't think it would have changed anything, honestly, by including that, the accurate history of him. Okay, so as Andre begins his first year of the GED program, so he did do the GED program for, I think it was just 1 year. And he made good grades while he was doing it, too. I actually saw his transcripts. He was a bright kid. He was making good grades. But he starts reporting to his friends and I guess at one point to a counselor that he started hearing voices in his head.
No, no.
It got to the point where these voices were so distressing that Andre had on record 2 suicide attempts, both using a butcher knife to cut his wrists. So this was all in the course of about a year.
Damn.
As is common, Andre's auditory hallucinations, they were religious in tone. He described it as angels and demons at war to control him. The cute little guys on your shoulder during moral dilemmas in cartoons. It's like that, except the little devil wants you to set a toddler on fire.
I don't like that you said that.
Right.
He didn't set any toddler.
Like, where is this going?
Okay, thank God. I was like, why that? Please say he doesn't light a toddler on fire. I don't want that at all.
That's how it started, but it also didn't stay that way. His delusions changed a lot over the next 5-6 years, but that's how it started. Was sort of a...
Oh, so he said his delusion started with like, oh, you should light that toddler on fire?
Yeah, with like the demons being like, go do this bad shit, and then him having other voices that are like, don't do that, you know?
But at least he had some that were like, nah, man, not a good idea. But it doesn't sound like those won very often.
He didn't actually really do anything. Like, he didn't act out really at all for quite a while, with the exception of he started drinking excessively, mixing his alcohol with cough medicine. And he did some cocaine and smoked weed, too, but... The big thing was the over-the-counter cough medicine with the alcohol. He said that that was his form of self-medication because it made the voices less menacing. So that was really his big issue. But during that time, he wasn't arrested. He didn't do anything, any violent. Well, there was a little bit, but we'll get into it. It wasn't big.
Robitussin for all your inner demons.
And what year was he doing?
It was Robitussin? Corsidin, I believe, that he was mixing with his alcohol, or Corsidin.
Corsidin. Drink this and they'll shut up. Drink and this and they won't make you eat a baby.
Drink this and your voices become your drinking buddies.
And that's before they took those things out of cough medicine, right? Like, this is like the late 90s, early 2000s.
It was DMX that was in the DXM that was in the cough medicine. That was the active ingredient that got you all fucked up.
Oh.
Not that
DMX.
One. Not that DMX. Not X gonna give it to you.
X gonna give it to you.
Say it. Finish the song, Richard.
I don't know what it is. If I did, I would.
No, you wouldn't. It has the N-word and you're a coward.
What's the N-word? Napoleon?
Yeah. Where are my Napoleons at? Mm. Okay, so I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself here, but basically he's starting to have these problems with drinking excessively, using the over-the-counter cough medicine, some cocaine, some weed. This would cause problems in his relationship. So he has a girlfriend. Her name is Laura Bowen. Okay. This is like a fairly long-term girlfriend for kids those age. This was the one that he was like, my girl is pregnant. I can't go into juvie.
Baby mama.
Yeah, so I mean, he's struggling with his burgeoning schizophrenia. He's struggling with probation. He's going through the adolescent struggles of love and life. He meets his love, Laura, when they were both in the 9th grade. They're both 14. And I learned from reading his juvenile probation documents that he was actually not even allowed to speak to her during this time because it was part of their probation. She was on probation too. And it was a condition of both of their probations that they are not allowed to have any interaction with other mini, like, little crime committers. It was very Romeo and Juliet with the justice system trying to keep them apart.
Well, that's they should have known that. As soon as you tell them not to, they're gonna automatically want to. Like, my God.
Yep. And they're still teenagers.
Oh yeah, the hormones are just whew.
Even when he gets picked back up, that wasn't cited on the reasons of violation. So his parole officer was cool about it. But realistically, that could have gotten him picked back up.
Both yeah.
Actually. Neither of them adhere to the rules. And at 15, Laura is pregnant. And by the time the two were 16, they welcome their son, Andre Jr., into the world.
AJ?
I don't know if he was called AJ. I don't think he was. So at this point, basically, as soon as his son is born, Andre stops attending the GED program so that he can get more hours at work because he wants to give his son a good life. Now, allegedly, this was in all those resources that were also softening all the childhood stuff. So I have no idea if that's true or what happened with that. I couldn't find any documents about it. Again, allegedly, by all accounts, he was a proud and dedicated father. There were several pictures of him with his son. He did seem to be, you know, somebody like a father that wanted to be there as much as he could be there. Whether that was true, I don't know. There were a few things later that I was kind of like, maybe not so much, but.
Was grandma good? Usually when they're shitty moms, they're amazing grandparents, she come with like what did you call that? Bouncy thing in the door?
From what I understand, after he and Lauren moved in together, he didn't talk to his mom anymore.
Fair enough.
Yeah, and it doesn't seem like she would have turned a new leaf because she's a grandmother. Yeah. She didn't seem like that kind of woman.
I don't know when she died, but she died at some point throughout all this, too. What's his name? Andre is 38 now, and his parents have both been dead a long time, so I'm sure you can imagine what they died of. Okay, on Andre's 18th birthday, he and Laura, who was still 17 at the time, but that's perfectly legal, got married. So isn't that sweet? They got married at the same church where his Sunday school teacher said he was a great kid.
Oh, brilliant.
So between the schizophrenic symptoms that he was experiencing, having to, you know, completely give up school, again, I don't know that that actually really would have bothered him, but it definitely might have. I really couldn't say. The drinking, and a big part of it also is there is undoubtedly stigma and prejudice that he is facing being in an interracial relationship with a white unwed teenage mother in Texas. So
yeah, that's a lot of flags went up there for danger.
Yeah. Yeah. And by that I mean that the racists look at their relationship like he ruined her, not that, you know, he's slumming it with an unwed teenage mother. Although in Texas they do hate both. They just hate the blacks more.
No, they're probably kind of happy, like two problems in one place. Now we can keep an eye on them.
Well, we'll come to find that that actually doesn't make them happy. And I can say that with certainty.
Okay.
Yeah, the stress that he's experiencing at this time, like, it has to be unimaginable. It's never outright stated, but given the history of him having a temper and all the stress and the drinking and the da-da-da, it's probably not unreasonable to believe that their household was volatile.
Little kids having kids. Like, you're that, like, you don't have the maturity to take care of a baby, so you got to deal with that, too. Like, yeesh.
And he clearly didn't have a great example.
Oh, yeah, no kidding. Like I said, I don't know how they ended up in their own house, but they did. I think maybe her parents got the house for them, or they already owned the house or something like that. Overall, like, her family looked very, like, white middle class from all the photos of them together and stuff. So I don't know. I guess she just sort of fell in with a bad crowd or something like that when she was young. But she turned that around, from what I understand. Andre and Laura split only 4 months into the marriage, and Laura takes Andre Jr. with her to her parents' home. So this triggers a spiral into depression, delusions, suicidal ideation, and eventually homicidal ideation for 18-year-old Andre. He didn't act on the homicidal ideation at this point, like, at all. So he's not being violent. He's fine. But he's got no resources available to get him the help that he desperately, desperately needs. So Andre thinks maybe he could take control of the voices with guidance from the Bible. If he understands the Bible, maybe he can figure out how to give them what they want or whatever.
Yeah, because demons and angels are in the Bible, right? So that's where all the instruction manual to demons and angels would be, is the Bible.
Exactly.
They'll figure that out. Exactly. Yeah.
That is, so he starts reading it obsessively, looking for the answers, and shockingly, this deepens his delusions.
Yeah, the Bible makes people delusional. Never would have thought it. Mm-mm. Thou shalt not kill. I'm not listening to that part of the Bible. Wrong part.
Actually, you'll find that he listens to the Bible a little too closely later.
Oh, okay.
Oh, no.
This is a fun
Hopefully
one.
It's not Revelations, because we're all fucked.
Oh, it is Revelations. Revelations was his favorite part.
I bet you it was. It's the one of the most fucked up parts of the Bible.
It was his favorite. All right, so
not
before
shocked.
Long, Andre loses his job, and he would go on to be unable to hold a job of any kind. The alcoholism continues, and once again, Andre became accustomed to a home with no utilities. So he's sort of just continuing his own little cycle as what happens in real life and not on TV.
Digging a hole in the backyard, taking a dump. Like, what are they shitting? That's brutal.
Now, big difference, unlike Andre's mother, Laura would not allow her child to live in conditions like that. So Andre was only allowed to visit his son once a week at her house. Never his.
That's good. That's something. Little AJ's got a chance.
Well, we'll see about that.
Oh, no.
God damn it.
God,
why?
Bless America.
Little AJ had a chance. Had a chance. I'll change hands.
I don't know about that either.
Oh,
no,
God.
Okay. No.
Damn it.
With the exception of like this visit once per week, Andre for a while became completely isolated from human companionship, and all he ever did was read the Bible. But his untethered substance abuse would eventually lead him to start making friends with a long series of poor influencers that undermined any sensible thoughts that he had about getting help or laying off the juice. So that was good for him. A few years went by and nothing really happened. He was doing his visits, he was drinking, he was whatever. Laura Thomas, remember, she is married to him, and her name is still Laura Thomas, welcomes her second child with her new partner, Bryant Hughes. Andre obviously still loves Laura very much. He is heartbroken by the event, and I'm sure he also struggled knowing that his son not only had a new sibling, but a new family, and he was this outlier. Ultimately, they ended up sort of just making a new family kind of together. He would show up for his visitation once a week with Andre Jr., and him and Bryant would just like hang out together. So everything was just kind of cool for quite a while until it wasn't.
Well, that's actually very mature, and I wish more people would be like that with their exes, if especially if there's kids involved. Like, some people are just fucked, you know what I mean? Like, they just fight with them. Like, you might as well just go chill, say hi, make fun of them when you leave. It's great. It's not that hard. Like, you be good, nice for an hour.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Everything was fine. There is no way to make sense of it. Like I mentioned before, Andre's religious sort of delusions and focus shifted to Revelations. It was his favorite. And he developed an obsession with the apocalypse, the hidden meanings in the $1 bill, and how his role in saving the world would form. Because he knew he had a role in it. He had to, right? He also starts getting a little bit more violent and out of control with as far as impulse control. In 2002, he's arrested for assault against a stranger. He was drunk at the time. I believe it was a bar fight, but I don't know that for sure. All I know is that he was fucking hammered and that he hit somebody. 2003, he's arrested again, this time for stabbing his brother Brian. Now, Brian also suffered from severe mental illness, and he had just recently been released from a mental institution when the two began living together. And one night, Andre was playing music loud enough that it could be heard through the walls by Brian. And Brian accuses Andre of letting evil spirits through the walls by weakening them with his music. And in the ensuing fight, Andre stabs Brian.
That's exactly how demons get into your house, though, is loud music through walls, thinning the walls. It's not even...
That's why I use headphones.
Yeah, me too. Just the devils get into my head.
Not getting me.
Thinning my skull.
Mm-mm. Headphones are protected. That's why they're halo shaped. Unless you use earbuds, in which
Poor
case
guy.
You're fucked. You're fucked, Richard.
Now you're telling me his brother has mental illness too. Like, is there a possibility, like, that's a genetic thing? Like, his mom was just mentally ill and that's why she was so fucked up? Like,
I wonder.
The question is, like, I was saying she can't help it. Maybe she just didn't know how to help it because she's just so, like, mentally ill, you know? I'm trying to have her back again. I don't know why. Okay. Moving on.
I feel like there used to be a really relevant quote about this, but now that podcast is kind of under fire. So now we're not supposed to use that quote.
Mental health is not your...
Bing!
Yeah, mental health is not your Bing! Fault, but it is your responsibility.
The official stance of an ethical podcast is to believe victims, and that is all we will say about it. A year after the stabbing, Andre was taken into a mental health clinic. I guess one of his friends actually got sensible and was like, you need help, my dude. And so he reportedly tells the staff there that he's feeling like life is too much and he wants to die. and they're concerned for his well-being and the danger that he may present to others, and the staff quickly move to get a detention warrant so that they could hold Andre for observation. However, this process does take time, and without a warrant, they can't legally detain anyone. So unfortunately, Andre left the clinic before the warrant came through, and then didn't return when it did.
Oh, I'll be back when the warrant gets here.
Exactly 21 days later, Andre would check into the emergency room of the same hospital where the mental health clinic is, and he would report suicidal thoughts as well as seeking treatment for a self-inflicted stab wound to the chest.
Jesus.
Yikes.
So I feel like might have been serious this time. Might have actually been considering suicide.
Yeah, chest is different than arms. You're like, you say it was in the chest, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's fucking hard. I don't know, like, cutting your wrist must be hard, but, like, imagine, you must have to, like, fall. Like, I don't know if your body would let you, unless you're really fucked up.
Which he was all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, that's crazy.
Basically, he gets treatment at the hospital. The doctor who examined him and fixed him up and stuff, he didn't need surgery. He quickly files to have Andre detained. But it's a new warrant that they need. And in the time that it took to get the warrant, Andre was okay to be discharged. So he left. And there was nothing that they could do about it.
I know my rights. I know my rights.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
He just keeps slipping through the cracks everywhere. From the beginning of CPS and everything, like, it just keeps falling through
so many cracks.
Damn crack.
All the cracks. Yeah. The only place that had more crack was his mom's house. Fucking got him.
Take that.
Take that, Roshonda. I think.
I hope
think
that was
that's
a real
what
name.
Her name is. I think her name is.
Okay,
Roshonda.
Thank God.
I think it's
Roshonda. Are you going to look it up now?
It's Roshonda now.
The good news after all this, not in the case of the story, there is no good news in that, but the good news outside of that is currently the Texas Appleseed Project is working hard to change this law so that hospitals can detain people based on mental health symptoms without the requirement of a warrant when that person show signs of being a risk to themselves or others. So in their drafted proposals, they cite several cases where the individual who they were not able to detain went on to hurt or kill themselves or others. And they speculate that by amending this law, they will save countless lives in the future. And I tend to agree with them.
Was this one of the cases they cited?
I think it goes without saying at this point. It is.
Yeah. I'm half on board and I'm half off board, because unless they have proper people at the hospital to detain someone, you're just putting a bunch of fucking nurses in danger by, like, making them have to keep some fucking guy who's clearly a problem stay there. If I was a nurse and that guy's, like, losing his mind or just stabbed himself and wants to leave, I'm not going to make him stay. He just stabbed himself. What's he going to do to me? Fuck that.
Well, they have
later.
Security staff for exactly this purpose.
Security staff is... they don't have the same rights as police or someone to do stuff. So they, a lot of where I am, especially, okay, you have no weapons. You're just a person who can call the cops. Like, you can't even do anything. You can't even, like, tackle them on the ground. You can't, there's no room you can take them to and be like, you wait here till the police get here. It's just like a liability thing. So there's someone there to, like, call the police.
Does your local hospital have an actual psychiatric floor or a psychiatric ward?
No.
That's different. Any hospital with a psychiatric ward, they have people that are armed with sedatives who are allowed to take you to the ground and know exactly how to do it.
Yeah, for sure. But my point is, if you make a law like that, you're fucking scaring me. Cause, like, I live in a place where that doesn't exist. I live in a different kind of place, but there's many places like mine where there's no psych wards. This is the closest one's hours away. And then you get stuck with these fucking guys that come in losing their mind, and there's no beds at the mental health places anyway. So they have to stay there for, like, weeks at a time, and they get crazy while they're there, and it's scary. Like, my wife's a nurse, she tells me shit like that. It's terrifying. Like, I don't like that at all.
How would this change that? First of all, this is just regarding to Texas, so it wouldn't change anything here. In fact, I'm pretty sure we already can detain you for mental health reasons here
for sure. 48 hours and then they gotta let them go, but
right,
yeah.
They can't do that in the States at all without the warrant.
Sure, at a big hot, like, there's still little towns and shit. I don't know if you have to, unless they make it so there's people that can actually, like, take them down, keep them there. Like, that's dangerous to me, but Like I said, I'm on board for, like, it makes sense. It's just, there's just not enough money for everything.
Let's say somebody's brought in by ambulance, though. Doesn't a police officer come with them and stay with them?
Yeah.
So aren't they protected?
Not the whole time. The cops come drop them off. They're good. We'll be back for them later.
I assume that's because of where you are. Because that happens here, too. But the cops stay with them all night.
It depends who they are and depends what they're doing. But like sometimes they'll just be like, anyway, it's all very case specific, but they don't have enough police to watch all the people that come in.
Yeah.
You know, like there are people that come in for sure that are like that and they have to stay all night. Sure. 100%. There's also ones that are like, I'm fine until I can't smoke for 4 days. And then and I'm going to fucking lose my mind on you. There's not enough money for a lot of shit in a lot of places. And that sounds like to me from like I get ideal world situation where we should have stuff like this, but sometimes it's like, you just can't. You gonna hold someone like that in my town? I'd be like, fuck that. Let that guy go.
I think the fact that they're applying for these warrants in the first place mean that they are set up for it.
Yeah.
I think it would be fine in those situations. And yours would be a little bit different. I agree.
It would allow them to, if he did go into an ER and the ER, whatever hospital that was, didn't have a psychiatric unit, then that would give them permission to send him somewhere that could handle him without the warrant. So they could do something more than just, all right, buddy, back out on the street with you.
Yeah.
I hope that's true. Because like a lot of the time there's people, places like that are just jam-packed and they're already talking about how too many cases, stuff like that. Then you just start adding more to that pile that's already there. That's what I'm saying. Like this shit, like I would love for that to be the case for everywhere and be okay to like just take in people that, and then who's the person making the decision? Like the doctor says they're not fit to be sent home. You can have different kinds of doctors that are just like everything is a fucking mental health issue, and then they just ship them off to the fucking mental ward every time. You know what I mean? Doesn't matter. Like I yelled at my wife last night, so you're a mental health issue, you go. You know, there's doctors that are like, just because you're a doctor doesn't mean you're smart, is what I'm trying to say. Like those are the only guys making the decision. No, I'm sorry, social retards, most doctors. I'm sorry, not everybody, but you know what I mean? Like
the system isn't perfect. It's not perfect no matter what we do, but I think it could be a little better if we implemented this for the victims of the people that are released because they have to wait 3 days for a goddamn warrant.
I just put them in jail. Why are we leaving at the hospital? Just when you take, don't
they
take them,
committed
put
a crime.
Them in a cell so you could detain them at a hospital.
Well, yeah, they would be under a watch like we have, like a 72-hour watch or whatever. It's different.
Okay.
You can detain someone without them committing a crime. And keep in mind too, most of this is so they don't hurt themselves, not that they don't hurt others. They're more interested in hurting themselves most of the time.
Yeah, I guess jail doesn't really have a good reputation for keeping people safe that should not kill themselves.
Oh, yeah. Wait till you find out what this guy got up to while he was in jail.
Epstein was an inside job.
We know. Yeah, so basically, like Sarah said, of course, this is one of the cases that they cite. Had they been able to detain him, I mean, there's no guarantee that lives would have been saved forever, but I can tell you for sure that three innocent lives would not have been brutally snuffed out just a few hours later.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
At 11 a.m. on March 27th, 2004, Andre walked the distance from his home to the Arrowwood Apartments where Laura, her boyfriend, and her two children lived in apartment number 340. Andre said that as he approached the apartment, he saw Laura's boyfriend, Bryant, leaving for work in his vehicle, and the two made eye contact, and Bryant gave him a nod. Now, I do find this doubtful, just because he did have designated visit times. This wasn't one of them. I feel like this would have been a red flag for Bryant, just to see him rolling up to their apartment as he's leaving. Even if it was like a jealous thing, I feel like he wouldn't have noticed he was coming and just let him go. But I don't know. I don't know their situation. But basically, in Andre's Looney Dome, he took this as Bryant's blessing to go upstairs and kill his entire little blended family.
What the fuck?
So according to Sergeant Mullins, the responding officer, Paul Boren, Laura's father, Paul Boren had gone over to the apartment and found the bodies before he called 911. He was dispatched, and upon arriving, Sergeant Mullins found 20-year-old Laura Thomas deceased on the living room floor, 4-year-old Andre Lee Thomas Jr., and 13-month-old Leah Marie Hughes deceased in their bedroom. Andre Jr. was on his toddler bed, and Leah was in the middle of their bedroom floor. All three were face up with gaping chest wounds. Blood was found in Leah's crib, and police deduced that the attack on her began there before Andre moved her to the floor and continued the assault. There were no signs of sexual assault of any kind on any of the victims. It was later determined that Andre had torn out the hearts of both Andre Jr. and Leia and had removed part of Laura's lung, probably assuming that he was ripping out her heart as well.
Yikes. What part of Revelations is that from?
He didn't say it was Revelations.
I'm just saying, my God, I don't remember that. From Sunday
school.
We'll
get into why he did that.
Oh, God.
That's fucking brutal.
It is a little bit. So
a little bit.
I read this case the other day about a guy that cut open a 7-year-old stomach and ate the food out of her stomach.
Oh, so,
that was my leftovers. Oh, God, that's disgusting, too. And I'm sorry my brain went there.
My threshold went up a lot after reading that. So anyway.
I bet.
Okay, so Andre's blood was also found all over the living room. So after basically what ended up, what actually happened was after he had killed everybody, he stabbed himself 3 times in the chest. And then he laid down beside Laura and waited to die. But he didn't die.
Right beside the old flesh wound? Like, he's not even healed from the last time he stabbed himself in the chest.
I thought you were calling his wife the old flesh wound. And I was like, what a horrible term for your wife.
Especially when she stabbed beside him. The old ex, the old battle axe wound. Like that? No, not what I meant, but killing kids, man, it's rough.
But he added 3 more. But he didn't die. And he was like, fuck, God won't let me. He won't let me die. Shit.
He wants me to do this.
Yep. So he gets up from the floor. He puts the hearts in his pockets and he leaves.
Oh my God.
I don't know what kind of fucking neighborhood they lived in. It had to be a bad one because somehow he managed to make it home covered in blood with 3 stab wounds and hearts in his pockets.
Oh, there goes Andre walking with hearts in his pockets again. Good thing he wore his cargo pants. Just everyone doesn't notice. It's, yeah, no.
I don't know how it happened, but it did. He walked home.
Oh, God. You said it was in the middle of the day, too.
It was,
eh?
11
it's not like
in
it was
the morning.
Middle of the... Yeah, the fuck. You know what? If honestly, though, if you see a guy walking covered in blood from like just in the distance and then walk past you, you're not saying it. Like, I guess maybe call the cops. But...
That's what I'm saying. This is a bad neighborhood. That's the only explanation. This has got to be a terrible neighborhood.
I would definitely call the cops if I saw a dude covered in blood walking down the street. I'd be like, yeah, that's a problem.
Yeah, I changed my mind instantaneously. I was going to be like, you'd mind your own business. No, you wouldn't.
No, I wouldn't.
I changed my
mind. I mean, I went to the extent of like, I would stay in my house. Like, I'm not going to go talk to the person, you know, but I'm going to call the cops.
I put this on Instagram. I put this on Instagram. You're going to jail.
I feel like somebody absolutely would record a video of it, but I agree. Like, I wouldn't approach him.
No,
but if I sue this dude, I'd be like, you know what? The only thing redder than that blood all over you are the flags you're sending up right now, sir. Yeah. Call the cops.
Oh, God. Yeah, I've called the cops on people before, and it's been far less than bloody covered in blood. So, like, hearts in my pockets. So I think I would, too.
I went through a phase where I was one of those fireworks people.
They're putting fireworks out inside of my
I was like,
window.
I don't know if
it's
gunshots. And they were like, you have... You've experienced nothing in your life, have you? And I was like, no. I'm upper class or upper middle class. Leave me alone. Although I wasn't, actually. Okay, so he gets home. He puts the hearts and the lung in a bag, seals it, and throws it in the trash. And his job is done. And then he calls Laura's mother. Her name is Sherry. And then he turned himself into police. So I assume this voicemail that he left for Sherry is how Paul ended up at Laura's apartment.
Sherry, I think I've got your daughter's heart in my pocket.
I will read you exactly what he said.
Oh my God.
Oh Lord.
Oh God.
So the voicemail to Sherry said, Sherry, this is Andre. I need y'all's help. Something bad is happening to me and it keeps happening and I don't know what's going on. I need some help. I think I'm in hell. I need help. Somebody needs to come and help me. I need help bad. I'm desperate. I'm afraid to go to sleep. So when you get this message, come by the house, please. Hello?
That's creepy.
I'm glad there's no audio to that. I'm glad you had to read that because, like, I don't like that at all.
I don't like any of that.
I don't like that at all.
So fun.
Yeah. I don't have a hard time with the cases usually. The kids do get me a bit, you know, like, it's not good.
This is a nasty one. I told you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's always rough when kids are involved.
It is. So, like I mentioned, Andre turns himself into the police. So he goes to the Sherman Police Department covered in blood and stab wounds, stands there in the lobby and tells him what he did. An officer comes out, gets ready to arrest him while he's being frisked. The arresting officer stated in his report that Andre said to no one in particular, "Will I be forgiven?"
Probably not. Sorry. Anyway, some really nice Christian people or something, but they're lying.
Here's a creepy fun fact that I learned from reading the court documents. Sergeant Mullins was actually quite familiar with Andre because when he was an officer, he had actually had several run-ins with young Andre while he was out violating his curfew. So he was just out being a damn kid while this guy was a beat cop. Imagine how weird that would be.
I remember when I used to pick you up in the middle of the night. Now you come to me.
Andre would explain during the interrogation that the incident had more or less started a few days before the murder when he was watching a documentary with Bryant Hughes in his house. This was during a visitation. And this documentary was about and an apocalypse where demons disguised as humans would take over the world and they'd start with intercepting government and that we would all be slaves to them. And basically, more or less, the conclusion he comes to is like, this has already happened. We're already slaves, man. I had a dream where I saw myself trapped in the door on the evil eye, on the pyramid, on the dollar bill. And I'm the savior. I'm going to save everybody. And it has something to do with being in this room, in this eye, on this pyramid, on the dollar bill.
Incoherent conspiracy theory, schizophrenic frenzy. Like, that's just what it is. Like,
right. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
But as he's watching this documentary, little Andre Jr. keeps coming over to him and talking to him and distracting him. And Andre thinks to himself, you know, it's almost like this little nose picker doesn't want me getting educated. Like, what a perfect little innocent, cuddly form for an antichrist.
Oh, no.
Goddamn demons. They'll do anything.
That's actually more or less exactly what he said. And then he starts paying a little bit more attention to the room and he starts watching Laura and he was like, she's nervous. She's anxious. Why is she so nervous? And then he has this fucking revelation, for lack of a better word, that she must be Jezebel. And for anybody who's not religious, Christy probably would have known this. Jezebel is like this seductress that was married to a king and she encouraged Christ's followers to like fuck and eat animal sacrifices and worship a sun god. And she's like really violent as well.
Okay.
Yeah, so this is what he thinks. He thinks now his child is the Antichrist and his ex, or his wife, they're still married, is Jezebel. And he said, literally all he said was the toddler is somehow involved, but he doesn't really specify how. She's just somehow involved.
Demon number one in the credits.
Something, I don't know, man. Okay, so basically he's now told by God, you have to kill them. You have to save mankind from Jezebel and the Antichrist. They are huge players in this apocalypse. And so I guess the distress of what he knew he had to do is what put him in the hospital with the stab wound. But then this was the first time he was like, God won't let me die. I stabbed myself in the fucking chest and I'm still alive. But I think he just didn't stab himself deep enough because all they had to do was packing the wound and letting him go. He decides to go through with it. He also says in his interrogation that he used a separate knife for each victim, worrying that if he mixed their blood, the demons would survive due to some spell.
Okay. I don't remember that part of the Bible either.
Right. Okay. So this is where we're at. That is the story. Without a doubt, Andre committed this crime. I assume we're all in agreement here. Andre did it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. No one's denying this. Not even him. Ever. He did it.
Oh, no.
Can you guys kind of figure out where this is going?
His attorneys are going to do some weird shit, aren't they?
His attorneys are going to be fucking useless, but we'll get into that.
I don't know. Is he just claiming insanity? I don't know. I don't know where this is going.
He's not claiming insanity, really. His mental health is kind of a big factor here. A really big factor.
For sure.
Yeah.
He's not well, but he's just committed these murders. So where this is going is nobody is going to want to acknowledge that this man's mental illness makes him not criminally responsible.
Yeah. So they're going to like gaslight his ass and burn him to the ground and just let him fucking take the rap for all that, which honestly I think he should. Like, I'm sorry that you have shitty mental health, but I mean, you just killed a bunch of people. It's the same opinion I have on our buddy, what was his name again?
Tinsley.
His new name?
Oh, Will Baker.
Will Baker. Everyone remember Will Baker? Yeah. I still have the same opinion on that. Like I don't, sucks that you had mental health issues and shitty that you fell through the cracks. I do think that like stuff has to change in the mental health field, like area for.
Welcome to the point of the episode. We'll get into a little bit, well, actually quite a bit more realistically. So 6 days after the murders, while he was being detained, Andre ripped his eye out without any kind of cooler tool or sedative.
Just
like five finger death punch, like Kill Bill, just three
oh,
fingers in the eye
gosh.
sockets pulled out. Oh, that's actually kind of cool. No offense. Like, I know this whole story is fucked up, but like, if you could do that, you're fucking crazy. Like, you get to win prison. Like, he'd be the best in prison now. I pop my own eye out. What am I gonna do to you, motherfucker?
Not when you're on death row.
Yeah. So they death rowed him. Poor guy.
Okay, so the nurses rush in to treat the wounds as he kneels on the floor, blood dripping from his face, right eye clutched in his fingers. And he said over and over again, it was God's will. I don't want to go to hell. So the prison doctor treats him. They get him to the infirmary. He's in a bed. And Andre quotes the King James version of Matthew 5:29. Again, I kind of wish Christy was here to see if she knows what that is. I have it. Matthew 5:29. And if thy right eye offend thee, pluck it out and cast it from thee. For it is profitable for thee that one of thy members perish than for your whole body to be cast into hell. So remember what I said about him taking the Bible a little seriously?
A little way too fucking seriously now, dude.
Yeah, that's rough.
So translated into normal for anybody who doesn't speak Bible. Basically what that means, if your eye is the cause of your sin, remove it so that instead of going to hell, you just lose your eye.
Yeah, not how he took it.
Well, it's also taken too literally because it wasn't his eye that was the problem.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, you just took it like, if I give an eye, then I won't have to go to hell, right? That's what that means.
Exactly, right? It was your brain that's the problem. Yeah. You have to rip out your brain. It's the only way to not go to hell. Although, your eyes are actually directly attached to your brain. So he did rip out part of his brain.
That's even more awful to think about.
That your brain has eyes attached to it? It's neat.
I mean, that is neat, but the fact that he like just gripped it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's that's wild. I've never heard of anyone doing that before.
Okay, anyway. So
so I'm sorry, I'm just thinking of you like you must have been psyching yourself up, like, I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna do it. All right, it's done. Ah, like I can't imagine it. I can't. I like to put a lot of the time when I'm doing these, I'll like put myself in their like try and get their mindset. And I can't do it with this guy because I think it's just insanity. I think I'm not insane enough.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good thing.
Funny that, isn't it?
Thank God.
Isn't it funny Thank how fucking Satan. Insane this guy clearly is?
Yeah, for sure. It's not really funny. It's kind of scary. Like, that's a guy. There's got to be other people that are just as fucking crazy that are still out there roaming. You know what I mean? Like, that's the scary part to me. It's not only him. There's lots of people like that, I'm sure. So what do? They get this, they fucking get this guy life sent, or sorry, you said death row? They just said,
I have more.
Oh, okay.
Fair amount more. Okay, so three psychologists had to evaluate Andre after this incident because it's kind of a problem when you rip out your own eye, especially when you have a trial coming up for murder, because that kind of gives you a pretty good opening for an insanity plea.
This is actually the one time I'm going to say it. I think that they should have detained him in a hospital. He probably would have been able to save his eye.
And his family.
Well, he was already done that part by the time the eyeball came
not
out.
Not the first time. Not when they were actually going to detain him. He would have been detained when his family died.
Yeah, but they were...
So now, you don't think that they should have done it then, but they should have after he got arrested so that he could save his eye?
Not the only reason, because he hadn't committed a crime yet at that point. You should be able to detain anybody unless they're committed a crime. It's like fucking not that Tom Cruise movie where they precognition crime. Like,
I don't know. I'm okay with detaining this guy before he killed his family.
I'm okay with detaining anybody on the basis of mental health issues because they are severe.
Yeah.
They're a real thing and they're very dangerous. And people with mental illness should not be trusted to make their own decisions.
For sure.
Okay, so like I said, three psychologists end up evaluating him because he has to get evaluated now. They're not really evaluating whether he's criminally culpable for the murders. Really, they're just trying to determine is if he is fit to stand trial at all. So all three of them presented the exact same diagnosis. Schizophreniform disorder with a rule out of substance-induced psychotic disorder. So if you recall, one of our old episodes, David Crespi, who killed his two little girls while their mother was out getting a haircut, and he blamed it on his antidepressants.
Yep, 100%. So they're blaming it on his like marijuana usage or his
the cough medicine cough combined usage? With alcohol, combined with he had some THC in his system, plus he had a history of using cocaine. So just all of that.
Robitussin, it'll pop your eyes out.
So yeah, we know what substance induced psychosis is. They have put in a rule out of this. So they have all determined that his behavior is not and has never been the result of a substance-induced psychosis caused by alcohol, illicit drugs, prescription drugs, or over-the-counter drugs. And basically, this note on file means all future professionals need not take steps to rule this out when evaluating a patient. Schizophreniform disorder is distinct from schizophrenia in a very important way, for this case anyway, and in general. Schizophrenia, that is a lifetime disorder with no cure. Schizophreniform disorder is transient and lasts typically 1 to 6 months. So keep in mind, I think it's very evident that he does have schizophrenia, but these three professionals, for whatever reason, have only deduced that he was experiencing a schizophreniform episode when he ripped his eye out of his goddamn head, but not necessarily when he committed the murders. So in order for schizophreniform disorder to graduate to a diagnosis of schizophrenia, the symptoms have to have been resolved or have to have not been resolved within 6 months.
Also, like, don't to not be considered not criminally responsible. And I don't know if I'm right about this, so correct me if I'm wrong. But you have to not understand that what you're doing is wrong when you're doing the crime. So, but since he made that phone call being like, I think I'm in hell, I did something bad. That shows that he already knew he did something bad. So probably wouldn't help his case on getting not criminally responsible for the entire thing. Because like, even though you're fucked in the head, you still know you're doing something bad. So that gets you off not criminally responsible, correct? Am I wrong about that?
He never said that.
No? Okay.
He never said I did something bad.
Well, what did he say? I thought he said like, I think I'm in hell. There's something wrong.
He didn't say that. Blah, he blah, said, blah. I need help. Something bad is happening to me. I don't know what's going on. I right. need help. I think I'm in hell. I'm desperate. I'm afraid to go to sleep. He never said that he did anything bad. Well, I'm glad you brought it up because that is a really important point. If he had said that, then there's definitely grounds there, but he never did.
Yeah.
So, like I said, right now, they have not determined him to be not criminally responsible for the murders because not enough time has passed since the ripping out of the eyeball for them to say this is schizophrenia and not schizophreniform disorder.
Is this like a way for them to like get away from being liable for letting this fucking guy leave?
No, it's just because they all want to see him hang.
Okay. Well, rightfully so. Like, I get vengeance too, like, especially with little kids. Everyone would be like, time from the fucking towers. Like,
these are professionals. These are especially mental health professionals, criminal mental health professionals. They've seen this shit before. They have to be unbiased. They have to be objective. They can't in their position without it. It's because he's black in Texas.
I was going with like, he ripped out some little kids' hearts, but being black trumps that, I guess. Okay, cool.
They have evaluated countless as experts.
Heart ripped out kids? I don't think there's countless amounts of that amount of cruelty. I think that's a very fucking rare, and it'd be one of the only they saw in their entire career. There's no fucking way.
So you think just because he ripped out like kids' hearts, that's the only reason they want to see him hang?
No, I think it's like brutality to children and just like covered in blood. It's like the whole thing together mixed in. Just ripping kids' hearts out, putting them in your pocket, walking home with them I would feel like that wouldn't be common, but maybe, I don't know. I don't know what happens in Texas.
You're right. It's not common. It's crazy. Absolutely nuts. And it's their job to say, you know what? This is nuts. And they didn't. This is prejudice. This is massive prejudice. It has to be. I know it sucks being objective in this one. I hate the kids ones too, but they're wrong.
Yeah. I'm not saying they're not wrong. What I'm saying is I understand wanting vengeance for a psychopath. Should they have done that?
No. I'll give you that.
Would they? Yeah, that's what I mean. I'm just saying that I get that. I get the fucking kill them, string them up. I get that. I'm not saying we should do it. That's what separates us from, like, this is what civilization is, being able to control that and have laws and make sure everything. I understand it. I'm not saying they should have.
Richard's fucking official stance, bring back lynching.
Only if they're white.
So on June 23rd, 2004, he's sent to a mental institution for treatment for the schizophreniform disorder after he ripped his eye out. He stays there for 5 weeks. The entire time he is funneled antipsychotics, kept in a straitjacket so he can't engage in any self-harm behavior. It is speculated that the medication dose was increased very gradually to the legal limit, to the point where it is basically having sedative effects, and his docile manner was considered grounds to be found mentally fit for the trial.
What the fuck?
Wow.
And obviously they can't record any instances of self-harm because he is
in a straitjacket.
Oh, man.
You're just going to take him to court in a straitjacket, drugged up? Is that what the fuck you're going to do?
After that, they didn't have to. He was found fit to stand trial, so they didn't really have to do anything after that. He basically just stopped taking the medication. Didn't matter.
Wow.
I originally didn't believe this. I thought this was part of the bullshit narrative and speculation. However, I listened to the Supreme Court evaluating this case, evaluating the appeal later on, and it for sure happened because they brought it up. So he's found fit. On February 15th, 2005, the trial of Andre Thomas begins. The purpose of this trial is not to determine guilt. He's clearly guilty. Everybody knows that. It's simply to determine whether he was criminally responsible for the murders. So we could get into the politics more, but this is really important to bring up, not for any political reason, or not political, but you know what I mean? Like any like virtue signaling reason. This is important for transparency, and it comes up later. It is an all-white jury in Texas judging a black man for the murder of his white wife and their two half-white children.
That's definitely a factor in this, so I'm glad you brought it up. It's definitely for sure something that didn't go unnoticed, clearly.
Very much so. So during jury selection, the pool was asked directly about to what extent, if any, they oppose coupling and or procreating between races and why they feel that way. One of the selected jury members expressed vehement opposition, stating, ironically, it wasn't God's will. It is kind of funny, right? Anyway.
It's like...
very ironic.
Like, it's, everybody has what's God's will in mind. It's just so fucked.
Yeah, well, that's exactly it, right? Your version of God's will is that blacks and whites can't be together, and his version of God's will is he has to kill his children and rip out their hearts.
No, I know. It's weird. It's so fucked up.
But when he says it, it's crazy.
Exactly. You're going to go judge the guy who just like interpreted the Bible a different way than you did.
And that dude stayed on the jury.
He sure did. Mm-hmm. Yep. He sure did. That same jury member also expressed a belief that the death penalty is used too sparingly in Texas.
Yeah, no, the most use ever. Okay. How don't they have a defense attorney to like turn this guy away? Like what worse? How did they have worse jury members? And that was the best one they could find.
So that actually, that man literally in that sentence was like, bring back lynching. That is pretty much exactly what he said. Just in different words. Another jury member said they oppose interracial marriage because people should marry within their own race. Not necessarily that they opposed them coupling or having children, just marriage. Yeah. Still a problem though. And another said they were fine with dating and even marriage, but not having children, because that's unfair to the children to not have a race to belong to.
What?
I'm sorry, biracial people. I didn't realize you guys didn't have a race to lob onto. I'm sorry about that. I didn't.
Yeah. Poor so, biracial people. I don't know. That's just setting them up for some kind of something, because we can't identify as one race, I guess. I don't know.
That's
problematic. Shouldn't be on a jury for a black man.
This is the early 2000s?
No, 2005.
Oh, yeah, okay.
The prosecution was like, I like these people. And the defense was like, okay.
Yeah, this is sounding way more racist now. As a public defender, I assume?
No, actually. We'll get into them a little bit, actually. I do have some context. Unsurprisingly, the prosecution at trial used this to their advantage and asked the jury point blank if they would feel safe knowing Andre could eventually be released and have freedom to approach their daughters or granddaughters with romantic intentions.
What?
Yep, and that flew, too. Nobody was like, I object.
Now, these lawyers are terrible.
God.
Or one singular lawyer named Gil.
There was two, and I will tell you about them a little bit. So, later on, it is revealed through whatever media. Andre's second chair defense lawyer, her name is Bobby Kate. She'd never defended a capital murder case before. And she admitted that a lack of experience would not give him adequate representation. However, at the time, she thought her inexperience wouldn't matter because lead counsel was a man named R.J. Haygood, an experienced lawyer who had defended several death penalty cases, black and white.
Huh. Classic RJ, piece of shit.
You're baiting me. You stop. So according to Kate, Haygood was in charge of jury selection, preparing testimony, experts and their testimony, and motioning to suppress Andre's confession. As it would turn out, Haygood would do none of that. In fact, he did almost nothing. The defense called no experts of their own. Instead, he used cross-examination to try to get the state's experts to admit that Andre was insane, which didn't work. He made no adjustments to the jury, nor did he challenge it when the prosecution dismissed every black individual from the original pool.
What the fuck?
Oh, God. Yeah, this is bad. This is, like, very Texas, though. Like, I want to be shocked, and then I go, oh, yeah, they're in Texas, when Limp Bizkit was still on the radio. You know what I mean? Like, this is a while ago.
Andre's confession was not suppressed, because by the time the defense needed to plead their case to the judge to suppress it, Haygood had not prepared anything. So Kate, the second chair, scrambled desperately to throw together a very sloppy motion, which was denied.
Do you think attorney RJ was just like, I don't have to do anything. He plucked his own eyeball out. I'll just say that in court and everyone will be like, oh yeah, he is crazy. And then he got in there and he was like, oh wait, oh my God, they're not believing me. What? He plucked his eye out, guys. Did I not say he plucked his eye out? And everyone's like, yeah, we heard you, but kill a bunch of people. And he's like, yeah, but he plucked his eye out.
I don't think that, because I have this context.
Okay.
Based on what I said and how I said it, it's very easy to just think this man is racist as shit, but he's not. He has defended black men very successfully in his career. And when it comes to being a defense lawyer, no shots fired. I know this is not a nice thing to say, Bob Mata, I love you, and I don't think this is everybody, but generally, defense lawyers, they will put their ego above their hatred every time. Winning this case would have looked really good for him. And he would have tried, I think, if not for the fact that he had been suffering chronic pancreatitis for the last few months and would continue to suffer from chronic pancreatitis for 5 more years. He died from it. So for anybody who doesn't know, chronic pancreatitis means that you are in constant agonizing abdominal pain and you are off your face on meds constantly. And he was in no position medically to be defending anybody. Andre did not have a fair trial.
He did not have effective counsel at all. Now, according to what you're just saying. Now, was he assigned to that? Like, sorry, I didn't catch that part. Did he hire them or were they public defenders?
They weren't public defenders. This was some kind of pro bono thing. It was like NAACP or something. I'm not sure. They were hired by somebody else to represent him because they had a good reputation.
Yeah, because sometimes law firms will take on 5 pro bonos a year when it's a case like this. You know what I mean? So like maybe they got assigned, but that could be it too. The NAACP does shit like that. Or like, I guess it's not Innocence Project. He's still early on in the line for that. So this guy was like dying on trying to just live life and he couldn't do any of the work. That's pretty sad. Oh, this guy cut a girl open. I want to feel bad for him, but I don't, because he cut a kids open.
Yeah. So, I mean, RJ Haygood had a rough time. Pancreatitis is can be caused. Sometimes it can be caused by other things, but most of the time it's caused by excessive drinking. So it doesn't sound like Haygood was having a great time being a defense lawyer anyway.
Hey, bad.
They can't all be Bob Mata. Fuck, I love that man.
That's true. Yeah, he's amazing.
So not only was Andre found guilty and criminally responsible for the crimes, he was sentenced to death. His execution date was set for April 5th, 2023, which, if the math checks out, was in the past. So in 2005, he was sent to Texas death row. And on death row, you spend 23 hours a day alone in your cell. And his mental health deteriorated even further during this time on death row. This was more evident than ever on December 9th, 2008. Does anyone want to guess what he did?
Pucked his other eye out.
Definitely tried to kill himself.
Andre took a silly liberty with Matthew 5:29 and gouged out his remaining eye and ate it.
Oh, nice. I'm not going to, like, I'm sorry, but that's cool and fucking psycho and I don't like it, but I love it.
Oh, and ate it?
Because he said the government was using his remaining eye to hear his thoughts.
Oh my,
that's what eyes do, is hear thoughts. Honestly though, eyes hear thoughts. Really, they do. If you look around, you're thinking about shit because you saw it. Eyes hear thoughts, man. Oh my God, he popped his other eye out. God, don't let that guy watch Kill Bill. I guess
so. For those of you who aren't keeping track, this man has no eyes left.
Oh God, are they just like sewn shut, like super terrifying? Like,
no, they're not sewn shut. They still open, like just a little bit. You can see all the scar tissue in there.
Come on. Oh.
in prison, enough time had passed for him to be formally diagnosed with schizophrenia.
Weird.
Yeah, think.
Which directly undermines the notion that Andre was not insane during the murders, but was when he ripped out his first eye. And that distinction would be the only thing that made him eligible for the death penalty in the first place. Ergo, there is simply no way they could execute this man.
No.
That's a lie. He's dead, for sure.
Lawyer Catherine Carroll eventually brought Andre's case to the Supreme Court, where they attempted to prove that he was ineligible for the death penalty because in 2002, the execution of a mentally disabled individual had been outlawed, and his diagnosis of schizophrenia made him legally insane in March of 2004. She also moved that they should have Andre taken off death row and into a minimum security mental health facility because he is no longer a threat to himself or anybody else due to his self-inflicted blindness. They brought forth evidence that the jury at his original trial were clearly biased against him, which violated Andre's civil rights, and his representation made no effort to actually defend him. And now I listened to both her arguments, Catherine Carroll, and the state's arguments in the Supreme Court. And the state representative, her name was Frederica Sargent, she did not seem well-liked by the panel. She made several errors in her briefing. In particular, she claimed that the four jurors that did report opposition to interracial marriage had been extensively questioned about whether race would influence their verdict. In reality, they were not questioned by this, and it was not found anywhere in the record. The Supreme Court called her out on this, called it inexcusable that she would put this in her brief when it was in fact not true. So far, good on you, Supreme Court guys. They did acknowledge that this jury issue was a failing on the state for not checking that their jurors are not biased, because it is on them too, as well as the defense for not saying anything about it, which they obviously should have. They didn't actually outright say it, but they made it very clear they did agree this was absolutely a violation of Andre's civil rights. But the Supreme Court Fifth Circuit upheld the verdict and did not grant an appeal, stating that, quote, "It is clear that Mr. Thomas is crazy, but he is also sane under Texas law because a jury had concluded he knew right from wrong at the time of the crime." So they just ignored the jury and how legitimate their verdict could be. They ignored everything. They basically said this was already tried and we're not going to fight that. So that was a big...
I don't know. I just got to keep remembering he killed two little kids. I don't like it. It's the only thing that's getting me through this without being very upset.
You should be upset about this, though, regardless of what he did.
Yes,
I am.
The whole thing is upsetting. You know, his childhood is upsetting. Killing people is upsetting. The whole thing is upsetting. But what's even more upsetting is the fact that killing them was probably the ultimate cry for help. And still he hasn't gotten it at all.
Do I agree that he should have been like Will Baker and they should have treated him and let him out? No, I don't like that Canada does that. I don't think that they should have done that. I said so in the episode. Do I think that he in any, I can't even find the words. I couldn't even form a situation where this man could possibly be sentenced to death. It is so fucking unethical.
Yeah.
He needs a counselor, consistent medication, and a doctor to look and after walls. Him. And you can still put him in a cell and a mental and institution. Treatment.
Don't let him out ever. That's fine. The death penalty?
Yes.
No.
No.
So fucking far.
Too far.
I'm not down with the death penalty for this guy at all, but I'm not down with the death penalty ever, really. I think the whole thing's too messed up to begin with, because like, just so prone for fuck ups like this to happen. Do I think that guy should be in jail for the rest of his life? Sure. Killed? No. But it's super sad that it happened. But I mean, they actually went through with it on the day. They didn't like push this back. Usually fucking death case, I guess.
They were granted no appeals, remember? Now I will note, the entire panel was not in agreement on this decision. Some of them actually spoke out about how much they disagreed with it, but it wasn't enough to have it overturned. So obviously, I know Richard just said he's wondering. I'm sure all the listeners are wondering right now if Andre was executed. He was not. He is still alive. Documentarians, activists, mental health professionals, lawyers, even Amnesty International scrambled to put a stop to this execution. In February, a clemency petition was filed asking Governor Greg Abbott and the Texas Board of Pardons and Paroles to commute his sentence to life in prison or grant a reprieve to determine whether Andre is competent to be executed. And on March 7th, State District Judge Jim Fallon withdrew the warrant for the April 5th execution date, giving Andre's defense team until July 5th, 2003 to file their argument. So currently the case is pending a court hearing to determine Andre's competence to be executed, but he remains on death row with only the voices in his head for company.
Oh, is there somebody petitioning the opposite way? Like, is there, it's just the state, but is there other, like,
very much so. There are heavy hitting proponents on either side of the debate.
Why do you care? It's so crazy. Just let them live in prison. What do you care that much? Like, it's a, all of this is like a waste of time. Just let them.
Well, because like you said, he ripped out children's hearts and he put them in his pocket and he just walked down the street with it. You know, like.
Yeah.
To them, justice is vengeance.
When you say justice is vengeance, it just reminds me of those people that will see, you know, something about like a single mom having a messy house or like a gross messy house, like, or, you know, she can't pay her bills and she's asking for help or something. And all the people that are like, somebody needs to call social services. Somebody needs to report this, da 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 da. It always reminds me of that because it's like, this is all from the perspective to punish the mother and not protect the children. Only morons want a children to go into the system.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's what it reminds me of, people who are fighting for this. But I think the biggest reason, well, I won't say the biggest because people are ultimately, I think, emotional. A very big reason is because if they acknowledge that he can't be executed, they also have to acknowledge that he should never have been put in prison and they don't want him.
Yep.
Out of prison, yeah. I think partly maybe because they think someday he'll be released, which he probably won't, from a mental institution. He's a very, very, very fucking sick man.
Does he have anybody? Does he have like family come visit him, like his brothers or anything like that?
He's got nobody.
That's it, eh? AJ, oh wait, I forgot. I say AJ doesn't come, but
he done.
No, he's not coming anywhere. He ain't going anywhere. Yeah,
and I think that's scary.
No.
But.
Sad he doesn't get to see his family or nobody. There's nobody in his back except for like, whoever's fighting for him right now.
Oh yeah, like there's tons of groups that are fighting for him. But as like too,
I question motives on this shit too. Like a lot of it's like to not help Andre specifically. It's more to like enforce the law and then like make a name for yourself. Like I get there's always that they're trying to help for sure, but it's not because it's Andre. It's because it's the law and they want to express it and go. I question motives. It's not to help. It's just.
Yeah, they have to prove.
I think that's a good enough motive, though, just to say, like, look, man, I don't agree with what he did, but you can't do this. It's not legal for you to do this. I think that's a good enough motivation. Like, Amnesty International is, like, tens of millions strong all over the world, and they are very loudly saying that this is wrong and they don't agree with it.
Yeah, yeah, I'm just talking from like, because how does Amnesty International know about this? How it's that one person who was like defense counsel that like this is fucked up or whoever, that's the person I question. Like obviously Amnesty International is not going to go against this. They're gonna be like, yeah, of course we're for this, you know.
Bobby,
like,
Kate won't talk about it. It's not her.
No,
RJ is dead.
Yeah anyway, so somebody's helping him, that's good. Somebody noticed anyway. Like I hope this guy doesn't die. I really hope he just ends up staying in jail. I hope it doesn't go far the extreme the other way where they just let him out either, like in the minimum security. Like I get he's blind and probably not a danger to anybody anymore, but I just hope he doesn't die. I really do hope that for this guy. I don't know if you live in the States and you can like call someone to help petition or something. I don't know. You do that. I can't really do much from where I'm at, but
just go to Amnesty International and just, they have tons of ways that you can help. Just pick one from the list. If you feel like this is an injustice and you want to sign a petition or whatever, feel free to do that. Yeah. I mean, everybody's entitled to what they think about it. Like I said, I don't necessarily feel bad for him. I do in a way, but I just, this is a gross miscarriage of justice. This should never have happened.
Oh, and it leaves a loophole open for the next guy too. Like, we gotta end that. The next guy could be less.
You can't sentence people with schizophrenia to death. I'm putting a hard line in the sand right now. You can't do that.
Yeah, there's no. It's not like there's like light schizophrenia. Like it's schizophrenia, and then you're pretty much.
Guess what? They are born in. They are born with the destiny of going to prison. When their schizophrenia presents itself, when they're in their 20s, or whatever, or even younger, they're in a prison right then and there. They're going there from the day that they are born.
Yeah, schizophrenia is scary, eh? How it just like pops up one day and then it's there. Like, I watched a TED talk with this lady who had schizophrenia. It was pretty inspiring. She went up to college and everything. She talked about how she lives with it, and it's there still as she's talking on the TED talk stage. And she just she's learned to live with the voices and not affect her life in a negative way, which I thought was super interesting. I never really heard a perspective like that from a schizophrenia person.
And I can't imagine how difficult that is for her to
for sure. And she says it's very distracting and it's hard to get through life, but
think of you learn Tourette's to people it. Who have tics, severe tics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's schizophrenia is like that, except nobody else can see it. It's massively disruptive.
Oh, just interrupting your entire life. Like, you're just trying to have a conversation and things are fucking going off in your head. I can't imagine.
And most of them never become violent. I think we also said that in the first episode. Most of them never become violent. Most of them, they seek treatment and have resources available to help them live with it the best way that they can, out of a desire to have, a normal and pro-social life.
And in the States, the people getting that help at a young age are middle or upper class people. You know, when you talk about the sort of neighborhoods that this guy grew up in, that he doesn't have the resources.
This didn't have to happen.
No.
This didn't have to happen.
He used the resources that he had available to him, and they let him down tremendously.
I agree with that. I think several times he showed a desire to get help.
He tried.
Oh, for sure. When he was talking to it started with his parole officer, right? Mm-hmm. He was talking to his parole officer, and from there, no one helped. Even his parole officer tried a bit, I think, but they only got so much power. You could just not put him in jail a couple times before
your hands are tied. Well, that's just it. He got referred to the fucking weekly counseling, and then his bike gets stolen. His bitch mom won't take him. He can't even go.
Yeah.
What could have been if just somebody had stepped in when this kid knew something is happening to me that I'm going to need somebody to help me through?
Yeah, no, I know. I feel like he tried to, and I don't think he wanted to do that, really. I don't think it was out of hate or anything. I think he was being mature about the relationship, going to talk to them. I thought all that was kind of good, and then he just lost it and got angels and devils in his brain.
He genuinely had no idea what he was doing was wrong.
Has he spoken to anyone besides his lawyers and shit? Has he talked to a journalist or something like that? No.
Nope.
So you don't know how well, he's medicated now. So I know he's still got schizophrenia, but when he's medicated. He's
not sufficiently medicated.
No.
They do not have sufficient resources to cover the costs of prescriptions for people that need the kind of medication he needs. They mostly just leave him alone 23 mm-hmm. hours a day and let him suffer with the voices.
Is this mean to say? Is it kind of maybe you should just get it? I'm being rude, but
it's mercy a kill shot. Killing?
Yeah, a kill shot. Suffering on the ground, no eyeballs, nobody to talk to, nobody loves them. Only people want to get them is people want to make a name for themselves. Just it's such a weird life. Do you even have any conception of what's happening because of you, what you did?
But if he was medicated and actually got the help that he needs, would he live a different lifestyle? Even if he was still in a facility, would he be able to interact with people?
That's a good question. I don't really know.
I think he would. I also think it's the only way that you're actually going to get him to do penance for his crime.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, he's too sick.
Yeah.
He needs to be medicated to really understand the horror of what he did and suffer through the consequences of that. That's the penance.
Yeah.
That is the penance that he needs. And he's not going to get it outside of a mental health
facility. No, I agree. Because I don't agree. Like I said, I don't agree with death penalty to begin with. Because it's an easier way out. Being life in prison and having to live that. And go through that is way more hardcore than just dying one day. I think way more torturous. It's way more, it fits the crime a lot better than. So yeah, it probably would be better to medicate him and then just let him live it out that way. But I don't know, man. This guy, super sad life. Wow. I think this is the saddest life of a person we've had on the episodes before. I can't think of a sadder guy.
It's a nasty one. It's a nasty one in so many ways. There were children involved. And the fact that our perpetrator you just want to believe they're all just bad dudes.
Yeah.
He's not. He's just sick.
I don't know. You still do. I shouldn't be fucking poor guy. Never would have been in jail to begin with, probably.
Well, maybe. I don't know about that. I think that if he had actually been being treated his whole life, things would have been a little bit different. But he had criminal tendencies even before he had schizophrenic symptoms.
Yeah, for sure. But I mean, not in this way. This is like horrific. And this is like hard to live with. Like,
if he really turned his shit around after his son was born, imagine if he'd actually been getting treatment too. Like, his marriage could have worked out. She turned her life around. So obviously she was motivated enough by parenthood. You know, if he was too, and they stayed together, you never know. You never know what could have happened. But I think there was all these times where there was an opportunity to help and there was potential. And it was just every capitalism single fucking him. Speed bump gradually changed his course to the fucking nuclear option.
Yeah, this is where capitalism's shitty, right? Like in the lower echelon, like for social services, like no one even wants to. It's too expensive. It's too hard. Like even now.
Sorry, guys, this one sucked, but it's also like very, very unethical.
I know, I was trying to be funny, but it wasn't. It was really hard. It's not funny at all.
Every now and then, it's okay to remind people that we're not just idiots.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of Unethical Podcast. If you're not in the Facebook group, stop being such a silly goose and come find us at Unethical, the official Unethical Podcast group. If you find you just can't handle the anticipation until the next episode, then it's a great time to join our Patreon, where we have a ton of extra unethical content, and of course, our brother podcast, Private Dicks. And in case you didn't hear the good news, Private Dicks is now Public Dicks. Every 2 weeks, an episode of Season 1 will drop wherever you eat your podcasts, and our lucky Patreon patrons are literally living in the future, listening to new episodes from Season 2. On the fence about it? Have a listen to the trailer and see what you think. If you've got a case, big or small, give the Private Dicks a call. And yes, the phone number is real. Enjoy!
Have you got a mystery that needs solving?
Where is Amelia Earhart?
We know.
Who the hell was D.B. Cooper?
Bah, easy.
Bermuda Triangle?
Probably solve that one next.
Here at Private Dicks, we guarantee a mystery solved every episode.
That's with a capital G.
Every second Friday, the Private Dicks take a client, record their session, and solve the world's greatest mysteries.
One by one.
Private Dicks solve them, no problem.
God, I love just crushing mysteries.
Search up Private Dicks on your favorite podcatcher and you can solve a mystery too.
The mystery of what's your favorite podcast?
It's Private Dicks. Another one solved.
If you have a mystery to be solved, call 1-855-PRVT-DIX. That's 1-855-PRIVATE-DICKS.
Call 1-855-PRIVATE-DICKS and leave us the rundown of the case. Maybe the Dicks will solve it.
855-PRIVATE-DICKS.
Because I'm straight when it comes to humans. But fucking gay for mole people.